Hi, it's Kate Brownfield from ADHDKidsCanThrive.com. Thank you for listening and thank you for all your support. Today, my guest is Chris Wegner, otherwise known as Speech Dude. He's an enthusiastic school-based SLP and nationally acclaimed presenter who loves to share the most current neurodiversity-affirming techniques to help neurodiverse students. Please enjoy our conversation. Okay, good. You ready? Okay, so Chris, I'm really looking forward to having you here. You have fantastic energy and you're the speech dude on social media. So I invited you here to ask you some questions and help us as parents get educated about what a speech language therapist is and how they can help a child who may be diagnosed with ADHD and more. So let's just start with the basics. Okay, what is a speech language professional and how do you support neurodivergent children?
Yeah, so we're going to, so the field of speech language pathology is pretty broad. You can go down a variety of paths. So I'm just going to speak specifically to working with neurodivergent children, clients, and within that realm. I work at a high school. I've worked in private practices for several years. So for your listeners to kind of give a background, I've been in education for 20 years. I started off as a special education teacher, and our speech therapist at that time was walking around with a smile, and the parents loved this guy. And I was like, you know what? I want to do that. Like, that looks like a lot of fun. And he had like flexibility with really working on a smaller, with smaller groups to really help support their needs. So then I went back to school and then became a speech therapist. So I've been in, gosh, I'd say close to about 3,000 IEP meetings, which is huge.
That's a lot. Yeah,
it's a lot. My caseload's always been big. I've worked on multiple campuses. And then we have, you know, some meetings where we have, you know, we have to have several meetings to kind of help out with the students. So I share all of that because I have some good insight from a big scope, but looking from the outside in. I grew up with ADHD and had my struggles growing up. And somehow I got through college, but academically, my kindergarten through 12th grade didn't look so hot, but hey, here I am. So I made it alive.
Yeah,
I made it out somehow.
Yeah. And you have great energy and probably great compassion, right? To share with neurodivergent children, right? That you work with.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. It's like that lived experience. And I come from a family too, where I've had some within my family, some extended family members that are autistic, ADHD. So on my mom's side, we've had our ups and downs with certain things that go on, but we live and learn and we work on like, what are the best things to support us? So yeah, so that's kind of where it is. So to answer the question, speech language pathology in the realm of neurodivergent students is all about coming in with identifying different characteristics and traits. Oftentimes we'll see in reports or we'll see from the diagnosis manuals that they kind of paint a picture of, you know, deficits or disorders. And when we really get to know our students, we realize that some of them have a different way of communicating. And it's not necessarily a deficit, it's just a different way of communicating. So let me give you an example. One way of communicating for people is to have a back and forth conversation exchange, like a ping pong ball, right? Where you're chit-chatting, small talk, while another way of communicating might be, hey, I am passionate about whatever that special interest is. I'm passionate about Harry Potter, right? So the person will maybe go deep into conversation and share a lot more information rather than the back and forth conversation exchange. So we have to identify those differences, because when we can do that, then we can support the students where they're at rather than telling them, hey, your way of communicating is wrong and you need to be like those other people. Because what ends up happening is that when people feel forced to be who they're not or to have a conversation that's really uncomfortable for them, all it does is it increases more anxiety.
Yeah.
It's like if you can imagine this scenario where you go with your significant other to a wedding because they said, hey, my cousin's getting married. We're going to go to this wedding. And you get there. And then the ordained minister is like, oh, hey, I want you to go over to that table. I know you don't know anybody. I want you to initiate a conversation and have a back and forth conversation about how that Cleveland's Brown game went. You'd be like, wait, first off, I don't know that topic, right? Like a non-preferred topic. I don't know that subject. You're giving me anxiety. I don't want to go back to weddings. So, you know, we have to really be mindful of, you know, coming in as a speech therapist, but how are we supporting our neurodivergent students with ADHD that are autistic and meeting them so we can give them the tools that are needed? So,
yeah. Okay.
So that's kind of where we're at.
All right. And do you find that you can you get a speech language SLP person to support a kid who just has ADHD and maybe dyslexia, that slant? Is that an option for parents?
Right. Yeah. So a lot of times when it comes to what the services might look like, it all comes down to the individual and what is the specific need. And if their need is impacting their educational performance, then we would look at, okay, what is impacting them? So that could be through academics. Maybe they have ADHD, executive functioning challenges that make it really difficult for them to stay organized, to initiate their task, to get things turned in on time. So then the IEP team would get together and kind of figure out, hey, what is this specific need in relation to ADHD? And the speech language pathologist, we would explore things such as the communication piece. Is this impacting them from connecting with their peers adversely to where they're socially isolating themselves or they're not advocating for support? Do they have any kind of language challenges? So maybe they are really struggling with the language component, the vocabulary, the expressive language, which is the ability to, you know, express ourselves and communicate ourselves, or the receptive language, which is the ability to comprehend and understand language. So we kind of look at those. But if the student is doing somewhat well academically, they connect with a peer, but they do struggle with some of those executive functioning things, then there's other supports as well that can help provide accommodations, such as the 504 plan can work, you know, which is sometimes an option. The main difference between those things is that the IEP is going to have goals that the student's working on, as well as services, like a speech therapist would be there. There's a case manager that implements the goals. So I know that's a lot of information there, but yeah, it really comes down to an individual need. The speech therapist can really help with that communication and self-advocacy piece. And then I think we'll transition to talk a little bit about sensory, but yeah, some areas of that too, because some of our neurodivergent students might have different sensory experiences, and that's a really important thing to identify as well.
Yeah, exactly. So I was pushing a little bit on the SLP because I feel like SLPs are really good at understanding executive functioning, being very explicit in teaching it, that I wish there were more of you available, I think, to help more the ADHD kids who are really like struggling with that executive functioning piece.
And then to follow on that, the big piece too is that sometimes we'll see students, it's like with ADHD and really difficult times with executive functioning, you'll have your, you know, your time timers, your visual schedules, your organizers, you'll have your whole minder of organizing, and they still are having difficulties, right? Yeah. They're like, hey, you can give me every single planner and organizer in the world and every single timer, and you can have all these digital things, but yet still have that struggle. So then that in what we do is we would work on how do we advocate to support that need. So that might look like working on that piece to tell the teacher, look, I struggle with staying organized, even with a binder, and I want you to know that. So that way, when we do assignments or projects or things that are bigger projects, if you can support me in that way, or like, hey, I'm a good student and I get my work done, but like my whole life, I've struggled turning in things. And I want to let you know that, because when you ask us to turn in those things, the teacher can be aware, like, hey, Chris, you know what? I remember what you told me when school started. Did you turn it in? I know, I feel like you have it in your backpack. So that way the teacher is aware. That self-advocacy piece is huge, not just within the schools, but that's like a lifelong skill.
Right.
So yeah, I always push for that piece.
That's great advice. That's great advice. Okay, so let's get into the sensory therapy piece and how that can go hand in hand with speech and language.
Yeah, that's a great question. This is such a good topic too, because the stuff that I'm going to share with you is stuff that we can do at home to support families as well. So really the concept is that if a student is dysregulated, or if a student has a lot of loud sounds that are going on and they're getting distracted, or the lights are too bright and they need to reduce those, if they start to feel overwhelmed, they are no longer going to be able to focus on the language development and the social part, because they've shifted into that safety part of their brain to stay regulated. So therapies, we're not creating goals for sensory. We're coming in with the idea that we support the students as much as possible to make sure that they're regulated first. And when they feel safe and secure and regulated, that's where learning takes place. That's where we can start to understand task. That's when we can start to really develop our thinking and our cognition and our language. So it's one of those things where the sensory approach to language is create a calm and safe environment, meet the kids' needs on the sensory end of things, and then you'll get the learning. If a student's sitting in class and there's a lot of sounds going on, or students are all talking at once, then learning's not going to take place, because their brain is in the nervous system is protecting itself. So it's not going to be up in the frontal lobe. They're not going to be concentrating on that. So from a sensory standpoint, as a therapist or even as a parent, it's like we structure the environment and we create accommodations. Noise canceling headphones, loop ears, which are awesome.
What are some loop ear?
Yeah, so loop ears are kind of like what I'm wearing with the Apple AirPod. There's no music that goes into it. So it's a small earplug that you can adjust the decibel level for different environments, and they're amazing for school. So like if you have a student who has sound sensitivities, which is for neurodivergent students happens to like come up quite often.
Okay.
So if they want to listen to the teacher and hear everything, but they want to drown out all that background noise, then they would look for something called Loop Engage. And then that particular, I think like $20 or $30. Yeah, I think it's loopears.com.
Okay.
But I mentioned that because if you can meet that sensory need, and it's an easy accommodation to put in the IEP, teachers are totally cool with it, because they're not listening to their music. It's right. Just solely for sound. They can say, hey, we have an upcoming rally or an assembly, and I got my loop ears. I'm going to put my 15 decibel reduction in. They put them in. Some of our students have trouble sleeping at night because they have their neighbor's dog barking, or there's a baby in the house crying, or whatever it might be. They have them for reducing sounds on that. When our neurodivergent students are at school, sometimes they don't want to use the restroom, right? Some of the reasons why they don't want to use the restroom is because they echo. They've got the hand dryers now rather than the towel. So it's a super loud sound. And so they're like, you know what? I'm not even going to use the restroom at school, but these can reduce that sound. They can, and they're really cool. Like they are tinier than the Apple AirPods. They're discreet. There's no stigma to them. So the students are like, hey, these are cool. Yeah. So on my campus that I work at, I've promoted those, and like a lot of kids wear them.
Yeah, they're that's great.
For me when I go to concerts and when I go on airplanes, I'm like bringing these things.
So you can put these things in and still hear the teacher, but it just kind of cancels out background noise. Is that what it's doing?
Yeah. And the coolest thing on the website is that they have like 5 different models. They range from $19 to like $50. And so it's just specific to what your needs are. So if you want to have a conversation with somebody, but you just want to drown out just a little bit, then it'll guide you on like, hey, let's find out what you're looking for. You know, if you're in an environment where there are loud machines going on, it'll kind of guide you to that. If you're just solely having trouble with sleep or with focus, they're like, okay, these we recommend these ones. But
okay,
yeah, super cool stuff. So yeah, back to what I was mentioning is that, yeah, the sensory thing ties in with occupational therapy within the classroom, within the school, with the understanding that our kids must be regulated, our kids' sensory needs must be met before we can work on vocabulary development and having conversations with others and all of those things. Yeah, that's where
okay, so what are some at-home strategies parents can implement? Because most ADHD kids are dysregulated. That's part of the, you know, what's going on. And so sitting still in school and all of that is very hard. So what are some at-home strategies? I would say, like, listening to you definitely before school, some sensory input would be really helpful, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with ADHD, everyone's going to differ, but like a lot of us are sensory seekers. So having that movement and access to moving is really going to help. So the way it'll transition into home is if things can be supported in the daytime. A lot of times you'll hear parents say, hey, my child seems to be doing pretty good at school, but they get home and they lose it, right?
And then they don't want to do their homework either. Or they can't focus on the homework at home.
Yeah, and I'm not a huge fan of homework, honestly, because the things that they're trying to be taught are like should be taught in the class.
Yeah,
like stressful for us parents and those of us who are neurodivergent. Yeah, because then when my children come home and they're like, "Dad, I got homework," I'm like, "You mean I have homework?"
Right.
Dang it. I hate that.
Right.
But so here's the deal: it's like when you have a student who might see themselves as being different, right? They want to blend in with their peers. So they're constantly masking or they're constantly like, hey, I'm just going to try to join this group. And that can be exhausting. And then if you, on top of it, you have tasks that are given and sometimes they go fast. So now you've got your nervous system and your executive functioning, which all of a sudden feels like it's getting overloaded, right? So you have that on top of it. And then as the day goes on, you go walking through the hallway and there's loud sounds and your sensory cup starts to get full and all of that. So you've got overwhelm, overload, a lot of it's subconscious too. You tie that all in. Once the kid gets home and they become really dysregulated, they've become dysregulated because they've had to fake not being dysregulated or having a meltdown at school. Kids don't want to really truly like have a meltdown, so they can hold it all in. So it's not a bad thing. It's the kids when they get home, that's where they feel safe, right? And as a parent, what we can do is realize and recognize whatever the situation is, like, hey, you need to stop playing your Nintendo Switch and come to the dinner table. I don't want to come to the dinner table. Or they're sitting down and they're like, Mom, give me water. And you're like, well, you have 10 toes and 2 feet. You get water yourself. Well, I don't want to get water. It's like 2 feet from you, buddy. But it's just all of this buildup throughout the day. When they feel like demands are being placed on them, then, you know, that nervous system is a stress response. So I think from what we can do as parents, as educators, as those working with neurodivergent children is realize during that moment of dysregulation, and this is not easy. This takes a lot of practice, but realizing that instead of seeing the child as having a major behavior or like trying to upset us, we see them as, okay, my child is in their nervous system response. They're stressed or they're overloaded. They're dysregulated. And so we need to take our ability to stay calm and get engaged. Like, hey, I see you're really upset with that. I'm going to give you a couple minutes. Would you like me to stay here or would you like me to come back in a minute or two? Hey, I see that you're really having a hard time transitioning from that Nintendo Switch over to the dinner table. Would you like to come over in 2 minutes when you're done with that game or would you like to come over now? Like, we're giving them options and choices, but we're trying to get them back to being regulated, because a lot of times if we don't stay regulated ourselves, and again, it's really hard, but it's like, hey, we're going to go outside and it's raining. You need to go get your jacket. I don't want to get my jacket. And it's like, well, I told you to get your jacket. It's raining. You're going to be cold. You're going to get wet. And then everybody's dysregulated.
Right.
So the approach is to immediately try to, you know, keep our ability to stay calm. And sometimes that might require us to step into the other room, get a moment, right? Like, okay, I can't do this right now or else I'm going to lose it. And then the whole family is going to be like on a waterbed. One person jumps and everybody else feels it. And so, so that's like a really good strategy. Another really good thing that's helpful is especially with our neurodivergent students, is to use declarative language as opposed to imperative language. And so the difference there is imperative language is putting demands on a child or a neurodivergent student. And the way we put demands on them is by asking a lot of questions. Sometimes we'll say, well, what do you think goes here? What do you think we're going to do next? Well, why go get your jacket? It's raining outside. Come over to the dinner table. Like, those are all demands. And so it automatically makes the child feel like they are no longer in control. So we can switch our language to say, hey, I wonder when you're done with the game, if you were going to sit in this chair or this chair. And they're like, well, I'm going to sit in that chair. Okay, cool. Hey, I'm wondering, it's raining outside. I'm wondering if we should like change our outfit. Yeah, we should, Mom. Yeah, Dad. We should definitely get jackets. It's raining outside. And so that's another really good strategy to try to give them some autonomy and try to make them feel like they have control of the situation. You know, it's even like, you know, that their favorite ice cream places, or like, I don't know what's popular in your area, but out here it's like Pinkberry. I don't know if that's a nationwide
thing. No, it's like yogurt. That's a SoCal thing, I think.
Is that a SoCal thing? Like Pinkberry and Menchie's and all of these places? Like, so let's say their favorite yogurt place. You're like, we're going to go to your favorite yogurt place right now. So get ready. And they're like, I don't want to go get yogurt. And you're like, wait a minute. But that's like your favorite place to go get yogurt. And it's because a demand was placed on them, right? So it's like, hey, you know, I was thinking about getting some yogurt. I don't know if we should leave right now or if we should leave right after your game. We're going to leave right after the game. Yeah, okay, cool. So like in a couple minutes. Yeah. So we're just shifting our language. It's not easy to do, but yeah, all of those types of things are going to be really helpful.
But those are really, really helpful tips. It's like, those, where was all this information when I was raising my children? But I would say that these things really actually do make a difference, right? This kind of parenting and language and using these kind of language tips are huge. They can make a significant difference over time, right? Little by little. Okay, Chris, I wanted to ask you, for the fidgety kids, especially by high school, like, what works for kids to kind of fidget? I guess that's more like a sensory input too, like, so that they can focus. Like, what works where it doesn't stand out with their peers, but they can kind of release any tension and regulation while they're trying to sit still?
Yeah, I always collaborate with our occupational therapist on this kind of stuff too, because they usually have some really good insight with other tools and things that can go on in class. But one of the things that I put in the IEP on the services page for the accommodations is that the student will be allowed to take movement breaks, sensory breaks, go for walks, make sure, sometimes depending on the setting, you know, the student will be able from time to time to work standing up in the back or kind of have a place that they can walk. Sometimes it might be one of those elastic bands that seem to work out pretty good with our students, where they wrap around like the legs of the desk and they can move their feet. So it stretches, but it has tension. Yeah. And then just finding any kind of like,
do you find the kids will walk around with that and like put that on their chairs by the time they're in high school?
Yeah. In high school, it just depends on the class and the setting and what they're comfortable with. But yeah, I work with students that have a couple students that have those. Some of them will have a wobble chair and they're in like a gen ed class where the teacher's like, hey, I got this student that's going to sit over at this desk with their wobble chair. You know, those like little ones that kind of have they kind of sustain attention. Some students like them, some don't, but I think it's a matter of exploring like what seems to work best for that individual. Like for me, I throughout my whole day, even right now, like I'm standing throughout my whole day. I got one of those desks at Costco that's like, you know, it's the electronic one that's stand. I need that. That's like how I'm moving always, but so like I mentioned that because the wobble chair would be something I don't want. Like I would be focused on the wobble chair and not what everybody else is talking about.
You would prefer to stand that thing and just kind of move your body.
That's my preference. Yeah. But some are like, nope, I prefer to sit on the wobble chair. But yeah, I just think it's a matter of exploring different items and different fidgets and seeing what works best. But I really do feel like, and that's where the speech and language pathologist can help out too, which is, you know, the IEP accommodations might say something like student is, you know, has access to movement breaks, sensory breaks, fidgets, or any of these things. And then the speech and language pathologist goal can be student will work on strong self-advocacy skills by working on requesting their accommodations in the IEP. So that becomes the language piece of it.
Okay.
You know, because like the accommodations are only effective if the student's asking or knows what they are.
Right.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
And uses them, right?
It's the thing. It's like, hey, you got these here. Like, you're failing the class. Were you going to take the test over here? Were you like, you know, giving a redo? Were you taking some movement? Like, they're like, what? I didn't do any of that. It's like, well, dude, you got all of that in your IEP, right, man. Like, what? Learn about it and then work on advocating for it.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to ask you before we wrap up, like, what age do you think kids should be involved in the IEP process? Like, for sure by high school? Like, where they're learning, like, where they really kind of start to participate? Because sometimes they don't want to participate. They don't want to be a part of that process because it's uncomfortable or they're not ready to, like, own who they are, which is fine. Like, do you have any guidance on that? When they really should start to get involved and
push a little
bit for them to take ownership of who they are so they use their accommodation?
Yeah, I mean, so, like, gosh, it's just so tough because I feel like it's situational because of this reason. So I feel like the students absolutely need to know what their neurotype is. Like, if they're autistic, like, hey, look, so you might have some differences and that's totally okay. Like, the kids need to learn, like, really early on that being different is okay. Because if they don't, then they start to see themselves as being different and then they start to feel othered and then they start to isolate themselves. And that leads to anxiety and depression and all sorts of things that I see in high school. So I think from a very early age, it's like, hey, look, you might have some challenges that other people might not have, and that's okay. We're going to work on ways to support you, right? So that way they can learn, like, hey, I'm cool being me. Even though I have some differences, that's all right. Like, I think that's super important. I think that them having some say in what some of their goals are, at least like having some input, like, hey, what are you struggling with? They'll say, oh, I'm struggling with math. I can't turn and say, okay, well, why don't we try to structure this IEP based on what you want? Like, that's intrinsic motivation. Like, if we go to therapy as adults, we want to be able to tell our therapist, like, hey, so this is what I'm having trouble with, right? And then help guide me. That's motivating in itself. So the students kind of know what they're working on. They know what their IEP is. When it comes to being present at the IEP, I always like having the students there. I just don't like it when the students are there and we're going over some of the assessment results, if it frames them as feeling like they have deficits or they're constantly hearing, hey, you know, they scored in the far below average range.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't like kids hearing that.
Yeah.
I would rather frame it as, and if that's the case, I would say, hey, you know, my recommendation is, why don't we go over the reports and we go over the things that are challenging and then we'll call the student in to talk about the things that are going right. So that might look like this. The IEP meeting starts, the school psych goes over her report, the OT, PT, speech goes over their reports. And then at the end, the student comes in, we say, hey, look, we were talking about how, you know, you connect with your other classmate in English. Your math teacher said that you ask for help when you're struggling. Or your science teacher said that she really enjoys you in class and that you're following along. And we wanted to let you know you're doing great. We also wanted to say that we came up with a really cool plan here. And it looks like sometimes math can be hard. And so here's the plan. We're going to work on these goals. So you see, like, change that language to make them feel like, hey, cool. I'm a valuable member of this campus. That conversation with families is so important too, because the things that the parents hear about their kids is going to change, is going to affect the dynamics of the parent-child relationship. So I think always coming in with a strengths-based approach, and then, like, what are the areas that are needed to help with? And then we facilitate that process.
Yeah, I agree. That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
If it always went like that.
God, I know. That's why that's
what you advocate for, right? Yeah.
And that's the thing, is kind of like knowing, like, hey, our experience, who's the case carrier, and like knowing how this particular meeting is going to go. And then I think that decision comes from the parent. Like, I feel comfortable enough. I've got like somebody out that really understands my child. But yeah, I'm just thinking about my own children and, you know, going into an IEP. I just want to make sure that what's being said about my child is going to be something that's helpful.
Right.
You know, that's the key.
All about moving forward. And embracing their self-esteem.
Yeah, it's right there.
End of the game, yeah.
self-esteem, confidence, because you're not going to want to self-advocate for asking for accommodations if you don't have the confidence yet to do it. So we tie all of that in full circle.
Yeah, that's great, Chris. Okay, so as we wrap up, as a parent and as an ADHDer, what words of wisdom would you have for other parents who are raising neurodivergent children?
Oh, gosh, words of wisdom raising neurodivergent children. I got so many thoughts on that because my ADHD brain went everywhere. But I would say that I don't know exactly.
Come up with the top three. Top three.
The top three words
most
of wisdom.
Most important, like of everything you've seen, all these IEPs, you yourself, what do you wish, like, what are like the takeaways that you would give as a gift to parents that they should hold on to as they're raising their own children?
I think back to that like whole thing we had the discussion on the difference, the different ways our brain responds. And so if our children has a challenging behavior or something happens that they're not a bad kid, like inside, they are good people. Like our children are good. We just need to try to help guide them and give them the support that's needed. And it can be frustrating sometimes when things don't go well, like, you know, bedtime comes up or then they don't want to go to bed or brush their teeth or whatever. But it's like deep inside, all our children are neurodivergent. All of our children are good inside. And the behavior is not who they are. And I think that's really important. And the other thing too is that, gosh, some things that I've learned on my journey and the things I've talked about here weren't always the case in the past. And sometimes I'm like, man, I wish I would have done things differently in the past. But the reality is what we do as parents, what we do as on my end as a therapist is everything we do is well-intentioned and we do what we know is best in the moment. And when we learn new information, like your guest listening to this right now probably learned some new things. Yeah. And we go, hey, you know what? All right, now I got some new information and now I'm going to take that information and I'm going to move forward. So I think the past is there to build and help our journey. It's not there to make us go, dang it, I wish I would have did it differently in the younger years, because that can tend to happen sometimes as parents. I do that as well. I've got four children. So so I'm constantly reminding myself, hey, yeah, I'm learning. Like we're all learning. Our children are learning. We're learning as parents of how to best help support our children without trying to change them. We're trying to change the environment. We're trying to give them the supports so they can thrive naturally, so they can remain their true authentic self. I think that's so important.
Yeah, that's great, Chris. Amen. That's amazing.
Hey, there we go. I came up with something.
Wise advice. Very wise advice. All right, Chris, thank you for joining me. This was really great. I really appreciate it.
You got it. I was going to mention if the users are listening, if you want some more information on the parenting end of things or the therapist things, then you could meet my dude bot. Go on Instagram. It's at SpeechDude. And then just DM me the word bananas. It's going to be bananas. So DM me the word bananas. You'll be guided down a path of amazing resources and support. And you'll learn along the way.
So they can DM you on your website?
On Instagram. Instagram. Just go on Instagram.
Okay.
At SpeechDude on Instagram. And just go to my DMs and type the word bananas. BANANAS.
I love it, Chris.
So once you get that, then you're going to meet my artificial intelligence version of SpeechDude. You'll meet the other me.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Okay, great. I will spread the word on that too. Thank you so much.